there's three shots of hard booze waiting for me at a certain place. I'll be leaving now.
Now?
Yeah. Yes, it was
while you
fun.
Were being nice, your 5 seconds got done, so deal with it. Now you have to wait.
Okay, so someone can take your place then.
Fuck no. Excuse my friend. Heck no.
You said you're leaving.
Yes, but then I decided I changed my mind. Church people can be quite entertaining.
Oh, okay. People cannot make up their minds. They're like up, down, hot, cold.
Let me start. Yeah. Okay.
No, I want to hear ridiculous arguments that end in.
Hey, we haven't even started.
Like, serious.
Kind of a welcome is that?
Oh, sorry, man.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to welcome the Mavuno Church delegation. Guys, welcome.
We're not really a delegation.
Brave enough.
We're just brave enough to be here.
Okay, whatever. You guys, it's really cool to have you guys here. This January 2013 Free Thinkers Night, we're talking about the question of whether Christianity is still relevant in Africa. In Europe, what we're seeing is a decline in religiosity. People seem to be moving away from religion. Many people have lost their faith, have become atheists, agnostics. Churches are being turned into supermarkets and shopping malls.
And nightclubs.
And nightclubs all over Europe. And it's ironic because Europe is where, how can I say, Europeans are the ones who brought Christianity to Africa. And yet it seems it is Africa that seems to be propping up Christianity globally. There's a lot of Africans that are still believers, and there's even talk of African missionaries saying, hey, let's go to Europe to evangelize, to re-evangelize these guys. So for some reason, they have outgrown their need for Christianity. Could it be that it's because they now have means of support that alleviate some of their more basic anxieties, like, you know, healthcare, welfare, and these things, you know, the governments in these Western nations, many of whom have a strong welfare sort of support system. I mean, they do cater for their disadvantaged. So the reliance on those people to perhaps be religious or rely on the church for support is a lot less than it does seem to be for Africa, where, as you know, there's still a lot of poverty and illness and all that jazz. So perhaps that's why in Africa there is still a tendency for people to be religious, aside from the fact that maybe people actually believe the doctrine. But the question we're asking is it still relevant, given that many of the things that churches were necessary for, we now have found solutions for? And now you will go to a hospital when you're sick, rather than be prayed for. You know, the economy has expanded, there's now more wealth in the world, so that there are means of supporting the disadvantaged without recourse to any spiritual solutions, or at least that option is there. So I just like to open the floor to people who might have an alternative viewpoint. You guys are Christians. You obviously believe that Christianity is still very much relevant. Otherwise, I'm sure you wouldn't be Christians. So maybe you can tell us. There's one here. Christian. Why is Christianity relevant to you still? Stella.
Came to be in the
book. Alright, so who thinks Christianity is still relevant for Africa?
For the world? Not just Africa?
Oh, yeah.
Let's start with you, back there.
I'm not a Christian myself, but I think it is relevant because every single Sunday we were still going to church. There may not be as many people going to church as there used to be 10, 15 years ago. But there are still people going to church, and I think that they take Christianity seriously.
Do you think there is still a need for them to do that, though? I mean, you make it sound like they do it out of habit. And it's a social thing.
I think that is a question that they can answer themselves. Because, I mean, as I said, I'm not a Christian. But I see people going to church, and they have praise. They have compelling reasons why they're doing that.
Okay, just a second. Shanice.
Yeah.
You'd wanted to say something.
Oh, no, I was just saying I'm a Christian. relevant.
Yeah.
I think from everyone's understanding of relevance, is it still useful, I suppose? Does it still have a purpose? I would say yes. And I'll try not to argue from a biblical point of view, because if you don't believe in the Bible in the first place, it's very hard for someone to change your mind when you don't believe in it. So at Mavuno Church, it's really, we try to appeal to logic and reason as well as just pure faith. So when you talk about all the developments in the world, I think are they making us better people? I don't believe so. I mean, we have less time to spend with our families. We still have, you know, a lot of disease plaguing the world, war, people fighting for oil, whatever reason. So I think that religion to me, and Christianity in this particular case, is kind of sanity for me, at least personally, because, you know, the same tenets of, you know, let's all love each other, let's not be selfish. I think the basic fundamentals of the good side of human nature are found in Christianity. And because each of us, I think within each of us, the desire to know our maker, each of us asks the question, what is the meaning of life? And that may mean different things to different people, and you may find it in different ways. But I think, to me, Christianity is one of the ways to answer that question, and therefore that renders it very relevant, in my opinion.
Okay. First, hang on, Joy, then Lindsay.
All right, cool. Christianity first is not relevant because it's not based on anything that makes sense. Now, everybody does ask that question, what is the meaning of life, and you latch onto whatever makes sense for you. So I read, actually, this, my rant on Facebook this afternoon was because of this, when I say fuck prayer, excuse my French, right? Because 10 days ago Obama was inaugurated for his second term in office, and yesterday the little girl that performed for him was shot dead, and in the news they were saying Obama should fly to her state and attend her funeral and pay respects, and in the comment section everybody was talking about we have to pray, and the question that was asked on this thread was, what should we do to curb this kind of violence? And everybody was saying, we have to pray. And that pissed me off, because Africa is the most backward continent on earth. And in communities all over the world that black people are, those communities are usually the most backward in those communities. And the reason why is because when tragic things like these happen, black people go to church and pray about it. They do not think, maybe if I forbid my child from going to this neighborhood, or if I forbid my child from associating with some of these people, they will not have a gun that they will use to shoot or rob somebody. They do not think that maybe if I spend more time with my child, or if I read a book and then give it to them to read so that we can discuss it and then they can glean some knowledge from it or learn the tools that they need to think for themselves, maybe things like these would not be happening. No, they go to church and everybody's like, pray, pray, pray. And for me to tell them that maybe you have to actually act instead of always escaping in prayer in church, everybody was like, oh, you're so blasphemous. How dare you? God will not be mocked. And I was thinking to myself, this is the kind of thinking that has made Africa to be used the way that it's being used in present day Africa. It's the reason why Africa, all through history, has been colonized and marginalized. And religion is just not relevant because it's a tool for oppression. Napoleon, what did he say about religion? Religion is present so that the poor do not kill the rich. Yes, Napoleon did say that. And this was a rich man who was a man of position saying this. It's the absolute truth. you tell somebody to turn the other cheek. You rape his daughter, but he cannot do anything to you because God will take care of that. That's Christianity. Instead, you go to church and say, God, please give me vengeance. What kind of bullshit is that? Or somebody steals from you and you say, oh, God will vindicate me.
What would you have to say to what Shanice discussed, which is the fact that people are basically looking for answers to the big questions, and she says Christianity is relevant to the extent that it is one approach to looking into the answers for that kind of question?
I believe that people are weak. People need a crutch a lot of times. And that's understandable because life is hard. You always want to think that because the idea of God, at least Old Testament God was vengeful and very fierce and very scary, but New Testament God is this—he's this benefactor, this fluffy being who will just take care of you and make sure that you're always, that if something happens to you, somehow at the end of the day you will come out as the victor in that situation. And so people need to know that there's something or somebody looking out for them. So whatever they're going through, oh, just trust in God. People, and I do understand why they would need that, but people do not realize that if you make up your mind about your own life and decide that, you know what, from this point on, my life is going to be about decisions that I make and things that I do, and if I mess up my own life by my own decisions, then I should take full responsibility for that. And if I do something good, then I should take full responsibility for that and acknowledge my own power that I was actually able to do that for myself. Christianity teaches that if you have pride in yourself for doing ABC, then you're being this conceited being, and how dare you. But at the same time, it leaves you weak because you have to go to a priest to pray for you. You have to go to a priest to forgive your sins. You have to pray to God to change your situation. What for?
Okay. Is there anyone who'd like to respond to Lindsay? Wanted to say something, but let me give a Christian a chance to respond to what Joy has said. If there's any who'd like to respond to.
Oh, by the way, I do not oppose the idea of an omnipresent being or whatever. It might be true, it might not be true, but I'm just saying, take responsibility.
Okay. Anyone like to respond to what Joy said? Nancy, go ahead.
I think there's going to be. I think maybe our understanding of what Christianity is as well. When we say Christianity, we're not necessarily talking about religion. We're talking about the actual act of following Christ. That's what we believe Christianity is. And it's been muddled a lot of times because we tend to follow the people who say they're following Christ rather than actually, for ourselves, attempt to follow Christ. So I think for us that demarcation is very strong, because even we as a church, that being the body of Christ, sort of realize, we sort of realize that there's been a lot that is said about Christianity. It's all sort of lumped into this view. Like you said, many things about being an opium for the masses, you know, just pray to God and your problems will be solved. But that's not what Christianity is about at all. In fact, and I have to say, I'm not a fan of televangelists. I'm a Christian, but I can't stand 90% of televangelists because they don't tell the truth.
So why don't you tell us what Christianity is for you?
It's there. So Christianity for me is a journey that I've chosen to take to follow Christ. Because having looked at everything around me, at my life, at the meaning of life, I've spent so much time wondering why I'm here, you know. It's not enough for me to have a job, get married, have kids, do some good, and die. One eternal question for me has been, why am I here in the first place? I'm sorry, but it takes so much faith to believe in the Big Bang Theory. My mind rejects everything about it. Okay, so how? There are things that I cannot explain. And when I get there, it means I must believe what even seems unbelievable, because that might be the answer. So for me, Christianity is the only obvious path for me, because nobody else has said that they are it, that they are the only one.
So how different do you think your life would be if you were not a Christian from what it is now, your life? How different would it be?
Very different, in the sense that I can tell you I wouldn't be a very nice person. I'm not a very nice person now, but, you know.
It'd be even worse.
I'd be a lot worse. And it's, you see, the thing about now, when I talk about Christianity, I was a Christian for a long time, but I wasn't practicing Christianity. Yeah, I was just going to church because my mom said so, doing the right things, you know, just kind of going through the motions. But I wasn't really a Christian. When I actually became a Christian, that's when it started to change my life, which is why I practically understand when people have so much beef for Christians, because the people they're talking about, to be honest, are not actually Christians. They say they are, but they're not. So for me, it's very different in the sense that it affects everything in my life, from whether I will cut in front of the guy at traffic, you know, to the decisions I make with my life, to whom I'm going to marry, to all those decisions. It affects every single one of them, to how I feel when I wake up in the morning, to what I decide to do with my day.
How did your Christianity affect your decision on who to marry? Give us an example of how that plays out. did you pray to be guided on whether or not you should marry this person?
No. Yes, I prayed about it, but not in the sense of, oh God, please show me the person that I should marry, because that's not the way He works. You see, God's will, there is His permissive will, and what I've come to understand about prayer as well, and what about God's will, is that even if I do something that He would not have, you see, people have this thing of you have to do what God says, or, you know, there's this, we almost treat God like, you know, the gods of Greek, you know, who dangle strings and make, you know, fate and all that. But that's not how it works. We have free will. We have choices. But what I came to learn, even when I prayed about it and I kept wanting God to show me, you know, kind of go like that one, what He taught me was that it didn't matter whom I chose. He would make it work, even if I made a mistake.
So you obviously have friends who are not Christians. Do you think they're missing anything? Or like, is their life that much, like, comparatively, are they much worse off than you, do you think, because they don't have Christ?
Absolutely. It's like having GoTV and DSTV. If one of them is better, I'm going to want to tell my friends. And I wouldn't be an honest Christian if I didn't believe that what I have is something I should share with
So
them.
This lot, they don't seem happy to you?
No. By the way, I'm not saying that anyone seems happy or unfulfilled. We have different stages of realization, I think. And I'm not saying that we are enlightened or we are, you know, or you might think you are enlightened, we might think we're enlightened, but that's never the case. I think what it really comes down to is when you are alone, completely alone, and you look at your life and you can answer every single question in your life and say, I know why this is, and I know why this is, and I know why I'm doing this, and I know I believe that, then you're okay. And if you're in that state and you're okay, then kudos. Maybe we are wrong. We could be wrong. I think about this sometimes. I'm like, what if we're wrong? What if I wake up and there's no heaven and I lived a good life for nothing? I think about that. But I always come back to the truth. And the truth is, I cannot imagine my life without it. I would not be anything close to
who you are today
or fulfilled.
Okay, thanks.
Can I jump in and counter that?
Oh, okay.
Counter my happiness.
Okay, Joy.
No, I think I
All right, sorry. Just a second. Is there someone who would like to respond to what she said? I need a direct response to her before I move to the next general point. Yeah? Okay.
You talk about, you know, as a Christian, and then you talk about how you pray to God. You're recording this?
Yep.
You're going to sit down now.
Keep talking soon.
Okay, so what were you before you became a Christian?
What was I?
Before were you Muslim, you know?
No, I was. Yes, I said I was a non-practicing Christian. I was a religious Christian.
All you knew was Christianity. So you're only a Christian because you grew up in an environment where Christianity was already predominant.
No, I had very many opportunities to be atheist.
Like
an atheist.
Like an atheist. No, I'm talking about another religion.
Another religion.
Something that gives you a higher purpose. Something that you can pray to.
Well, like everyone in this room, Jehovah's Witnesses have knocked on my door.
But that's still Christianity. It still goes down to God and Jesus and the Holy Trinity, although the Jehovah's Witnesses might have a problem with that. What I'm saying is, you're only a Christian because that is the environment that you are exposed to. If you are in Saudi Arabia, you'd be a Muslim. Let me finish there. That's the only reason you all are Christians. Number two, when you pray, atheists call it thinking. When you sit down and you think about a situation, some of us will go so far as to practice yoga and meditate. We'll find an answer deep down inside ourselves. So that's my response to you. Not what I wanted to say originally about is Christianity relevant. I think that all religious denominations are very relevant in society. Tribal units are broken down. Families are breaking down. People need to belong to a group in society. And religions provide that and makes it easier to manage in terms of morals. I know that atheists like to say that, you know, you don't need religion to be, you know, to have morals. But some people, if you remove religion, they do all sorts of crazy shit. So God keeps his people in check. It gives them a sense of unity, a sense of family. So because I remember back in the days when I was a Catholic, every time I went for confession, I came out feeling like a brand new coin. And those days are gone now, you see, because I no longer believe in God. But who am I to deny others comfort? If when you know, commune with fellow religious people and you find the answer in a higher power and it makes you feel like a better person, so be it. There is a reason that atheists have, you know, higher levels of depression than religious people.
We do?
We do, by the way. Big time. So
it's waiter.
So I think that in that respect, all religions are relevant. To say that, say, some people like to say that Islam, you know.
So you're not one of those atheists who wishes for an end to religion?
Oh, I do. Like Jehovah's Witnesses feel better than other. You have the Pentecostals, the smallest group shouting louder than anyone else, feeling better than the larger Christian denominations. There's just too much division and it's not necessary. We should all be able to come together as one. In school, there was a difference. Catholics, Protestants, Pentecostals, there was a serious division. Are you saved? You're not saved. You're going to hell. But I'm Catholic. What do you mean I'm not saved? I got that all of the time. There's too much division. We are not one people in our religion. That is the only reason that I would want religion to end. Otherwise, I don't see it causing any harm.
Okay, all right. Just a second. Stella, I'm just going to let Nancy respond to Lindsay and then I'll back to you, yeah? Go ahead.
I just want to address the part that I am a Christian because that's all I've ever seen. For me, that's a very reductionist argument, one that negates all my intellect, which, by the way, is a bit offensive. And it really is reductionist in the sense that, I've grown up among people who do drugs. It's almost the same thing. It's like saying, because that's what I've been exposed to, then that's what I'm going to become. And I think that is ridiculous, to say the least.
That's not true. See, that's not true. If you grow up exposed to drugs and stuff like that, there will still be, you know, opportunities in school. There's even churches that will take you off the drugs. There's help for those
opportunities outside church to become an atheist or to become a Muslim. I could have married a sheikh.
There's no one going like leave Christianity.
Okay, so Nancy, what would you say to a Muslim person from Saudi Arabia who tells you, without my goodness, Islam has just given me direction, meaning, you know, what, you're not a Muslim, you're missing out on so much, what's wrong with you? What would you say to, because it seems to be subjective, doesn't it, that people seek fulfillment in their various belief systems. I mean, a Muslim will speak with as much confidence as you.
Absolutely.
About how happy his faith has made him.
Absolutely, but you see, I would be a liar and a hypocrite if I did not say, fine, that's what you believe, but I have to tell you about what I believe, because I feel like that's my responsibility, is to share it with other people. So I would be a hypocrite. Like the people who say all religions are right. You can't all be right. It's impossible. You can't all be right. So if I don't have a conviction, yes, they can all be wrong, but how do you want to find that out? So
So if I don't have that conviction, then I'm a hypocrite and a liar. So you will not find me apologizing for saying that Jesus is the way, because I believe that, much as you believe that he is not.
Okay.
So it's as simple as that.
All right, Stella.
What was I going to say?
All right.
All right, Ken.
Who wanted to say something?
There was a guy, that's why.
This one.
Yeah, I think you've got to pay attention to socialization. You know, if you are from your earliest moment of living in a family that is Christian, and then you go to a Christian school, this is going to shape hugely the way you look at the world. The second point is rather linked to what Lindsay was saying about Saudi Arabia. I mean, you've got to ask yourself, you are Christian because it was the British that colonized Uganda and this area of the world. Had it been the Indians, you'd be a Hindu or a Sikh. All
no,
very likely, you might
very
be
likely,
you might be an evangelical
no,
Hindu, Hindu but
Catholic.
Well, yes, so, but it would be very likely it was your chance. You feel
yes,
so certain because of who it was that colonized. And the last thing I like to say is this. I mean, of all the brands of Christianity that get up my very big nose, it's the evangelical brand that at Nambole Stadium destroy the athletics track and pitch. But never mind. I wish they would remember that it's a national sports stadium and not a church. But what I would say is this. All these pastors, like Pastor Benny Sinn, shall we call him, who that all their supposed miracles are ones that cannot be verified. They, like, you know, somebody is lame and they start walking, you know, and so on. They cannot be verified. They don't do a miracle like tomorrow you're going to wake up and all the potholes in Kampala will be gone, because we will wake up and all the potholes would still be there.
Amen. That would be a good miracle. Okay, those are gentlemen back there. Just a second. Hello. Hi. How are you guys doing? I just want someone to smile at least. Guys over there, hi. How are you? All right. Back to my... just two things. One, Nancy said something about she was a bad person before you... Like you'd be a bad person or something like that. You didn't say that? Would be a worse person or something like that. You what? Oh yeah, yeah. That's the thing. I was just wondering, like, if, for example, by like a tiny hair of a percentage, you found out it wasn't true, would you really be a terrible person tomorrow because what you believe today is not true? Like, I'm just wondering, if you found out Christianity wasn't true, would you then cut people in front, like in front of the line? Would you then feel free to say bad stuff? Like, I don't know. Because, like, for me, I don't think, you know, like, there's this quote about if I wasn't a Christian, I'd just be raping everyone. But for me, I've raped everyone I want to rape, which is zero. Like, I... Yeah, then the second thing, I think we're veering off the topic a little bit because we're discussing the relevancy. So I think maybe after the back and forth, we can go back to discussing how relevant it is to Africa. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, as a recovering atheist and sworn religion. Well, I don't know how you define religion, so I must apologize for coming late. But I don't know how you define religion. I am a scientist by profession, by education, and also by conviction, but that doesn't disqualify me from being a believer in one true God. I just want to state that the benefits of being religious, whether you are a Mayan, whether you are Christian, whether you are a Hindu, whether you believe in Confucius, whether you believe in Christianity like I do, have unequivocally proved by science. As a doctor, I'm a doctor by profession. It's known that, for example, high blood pressure is reduced in people who believe in a religious set of beliefs. It is well known as well that, for example, you know, people recover very quickly from illnesses. Yes, in 1982, there was a study. I mean, there are very many studies I can quote, but I'm just giving. Let me give you a study that was done in 1982, which is very peculiar because it wasn't what people would call scientific. There was a doctor, I forget his name, but I can actually give you the sources if you want, who actually did a very peculiar study. He did a randomized controlled trial where he had a group of people pray for patients. All right, these patients never got in touch with the people who were actually prayed who they prayed for. For example, I'm a patient. There are people who are actually praying for me. All right, and then there another group. These people were not prayed for, and it was actually unequivocally shown that the people who were prayed for had lower incidences of rehospitalization, lower incidences of pneumonia, lower incidence of cardiovascular diseases, lower incidences of heart attacks than the patients in the randomized arm of people who were not prayed for. I can give you this study. I can quote it for you. You can even Google it if you want. It is a seminal study, and it has been replicated in other studies.
Okay, if I might just say, and this is something that we're all going to have to verify like later on in our own time. But on the Free Thought Kampala blog, I actually have an article in which I do explore prayer studies, right. And actually they don't quite reflect the results you're sharing with us. But I'll leave that for people to look up later on in their own time. Yeah.
But that doesn't still negate the benefits of believing in a religious being. I'm being religious. It doesn't negate it. 80%, if you look at the Cochrane Review, 80% of studies that have been found, that have been done on religion and the benefits of religion, unequivocally show that actually, it's unequivocal. Excuse me, I'm quoting studies that you guys are asking for.
Let him finish. All right. Respond. Go ahead.
If you look at systemic reviews, I'm not talking about one particular study. I'm talking about a group of studies. 80% of those studies show that actually believing in a religious set of beliefs, even the fact of just praying daily, which by the way, 20% of atheists do pray daily, and this study was done in America. I'll just have to. 20%. Excuse me. I also fought the urge to laugh at some of your points.
Allow me to bring us back on topic.
Sure, no problem.
You raise
the benefits of religion, right?
You raise interesting points. So
thank you.
For you,
right?
You look at these benefits as the reason as to why Christianity would still be very relevant. Because in your view, based on this information, it enriches people's lives in many ways.
There was an argument here earlier on. Somebody said that if I wasn't a Christian today, would I have been less moralistic? You guys are bringing in the difference between, say, moral benefits of religion. And studies do support this. Many studies actually show that actually people who are religious do have a greater percentage of moral, but they are more moralistic than those who are not. There are studies which show that they're less likely to be smokers. I'm not saying that being smoker is less moralistic than anybody else. They're less likely to be alcoholics and recover from alcoholism. They're less likely to have aspects of illegitimate children. They are less likely to divorce. They are more likely to have happier marriage.
Okay.
And also less likely to commit crimes, which is a moral aptitude.
Okay. I understand. Good point. But good points. But I'm saying, okay, it's difficult for us to discuss on the basis of studies because we would have to see the studies in order to be able to engage with you.
I thought that was the basis of the
discussion. So what I'm saying is, thanks for raising the points. I guess everyone is invited to research these things, look them up, and find out for yourself. Now I'm going to let Philip respond to some of your points.
Control yourself,
okay. I have not specified what religion. Even if it's the religion, even if you have decided to think of a temple god, even if you want to be like a Mayan and worship the sun, even if you want to worship an insect, there is a benefit to actually doing that. And studies, scientific studies, okay? I just quoted a 1982 study because that's one I'm very familiar with. But I just said a Cochrane systemic review, which, by the way, very many atheists or scientists relates to, because I mean Cochrane is
sorry.
Just standard in science.
What's your name?
Daniel
Tumwini. Daniel, do you think, are you on Facebook?
I am very on Facebook.
Okay, do you think you can when you can you look this just a second tomorrow
sending you the
tomorrow
no
could, you
no
just, could you just post the links on
no
the Free Thought Kampala Facebook
no
page you can do that,
I can do that
so now. That we can verify this because we're very curious about this study that you said.
I am not a rumor monger. I am a scientist, as I said.
Yeah, so we want to know
whether
the
I'm a doctor or not. I am a scientist by profession, who is a recovering atheist and a convicted Christian.
Okay, he's a convicted Christian. All right, Philip.
A lot of good lifted the Maya. That's all.
Okay.
All right.
I'm really bursting to speak.
Okay. We're going to.
I'm really bursting to speak. I'll ask.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So, I think it would be nice if people who haven't spoken, their brain registers in religious experience the way that like Christians or Muslims do. That study was later debunked, but I think the point remains the same, that people can find whatever religious or moral or personally spiritual center from whatever that is, whether it's cars or alcohol or having illegitimate children or sex or Buddhism or shoes. You keep more eyes. Are you trying to say something, Phil, about shoes? But I the question is Christianity relevant? And I don't necessarily think. No, the question is Christianity relevant in Africa? And I don't necessarily think that Christianity is more relevant than whatever blows your skirt up, basically.
Why?
All right.
Because whether or not it's shoes or sex or alcohol or whatever, wherever you get your moral center.
Okay, but the question I want to ask the Christians here is, you know, like many of us who are atheists today were formerly Christians, and many of us didn't. How can I say? Like after realizing, okay, well, there's probably no God. Christianity is not true. We didn't just go out there, start killing people, raping people. It's like we basically, as human beings, we have that foundation of empathy. You know, we are social animals. We like to cooperate with people. Cooperating with others is actually beneficial to my self-interest. It benefits me to cooperate with you. You know, on a long-term basis, I stand to gain more by cooperating with members of my society than being selfish and being aggressive. So my own biological impulses drive me to be a reasonably charitable and friendly person. I don't necessarily need a spiritual guide. Conversely, we have seen people who are religious do horrendous things. Many of our religious leaders here are quite hypocritical people. They steal, they are adulterous, they steal people's spouses, they defraud people, stage manage miracles, they do all of this. Now, Christianity obviously did nothing to stop them from being immoral. Meanwhile, atheists and seem to be finding a source for their inspiration to not be immoral. So it seems to me that you can't really associate religiosity or belief to morality, because many of us who are not religious, I'd like to think we're quite moral. So I'll let this gentleman say something. Would you like to respond to what I'm saying?
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, how are you doing? My name is Brian, and I am a free thinker. I actually think freely, but I love Jesus with every bit of me.
Yeah, but this is what I want to say. You know, let's look at marriage. There's marriage, the institution, which has issues, problems, marriages breaking up day and night. There's so many things going wrong. And then there is marriage, the relationship between two people falling in love and being crazy about each other. And these two are different things. The institution, an institution is where you go like to school and then after graduating you get out. A relationship is different. And that is what Christianity is about. There's Christianity, the religion, the institution of Christianity, where many of us, where many of us have seen lots of problems, and wherever you put people, you'll find problems. Even in this group, all of us have issues, all of us have things we are dealing with personally, because we are human beings. But then there is Christianity, the relationship.
a one-on-one journey. You understand that? And just like Bill Cosby said that, you know, there was a time when I was crazy about my wife and I would buy roses, would make love almost every night. It was beautiful, you know, at that stage of the beginning of falling in love. And then it comes to another stage in life where she's still my wife after 20 years or 30 years and we don't make love as often. We don't, you know, she has to carry certain parts of her body to get out of bed every morning. But he said, I love her more now than then. And it's the same thing as Christianity as a relationship. And I know many of us have been disappointed by Christianity. And that is bound to happen. I get disappointed continuously, day after day, with what I see in churches, what I see our pastors do, what I'm seeing people that are calling themselves very spiritual Christians do. It is so disappointing. And I actually think that if Jesus was to come back today, he wouldn't even be allowed in many of our churches. He would be kept outside. But then there is Jesus, the relationship, the man that used to spend time with prostitutes. Where many of
I know, I know a few
right
myself.
There.
He was that kind of guy.
I quote this. There's a story where the Bible says that this lady who was a prostitute came and poured expensive perfume on Jesus. Now, if you look at that expensive perfume, it's actually called a whole year's wages. Now, this, by the time a prostitute collects a whole year's wages and spends it pouring it on someone, that is so much love. And by the time somebody gets to the point of loving someone, they have done something so special for them. And that's why Jesus said, he who is forgiven a lot loves a lot. You know, it is a relationship. You get to know someone and you love them. Day by day it grows. You get to know them more. It's not a religion. And honestly, keep me out of churches. If you put me out of churches, I'd be glad, because some of the churches are so rotten. So rotten. But then there's Jesus, the relationship. Each and every day getting to know him as someone and changing your life. I've seen that in my life. And my life has been changed. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. Thank you. Philip, you want to respond to that?
Oh, praise Jesus.
Wait, hang on, hold on.
Such a passionate speaker. I give him that. But, am I holding it right? Okay, I'm one of the... No, that's not what she said, Savannah. Okay, you hold it, then I speak into the damn thing. I actually believe religion serves some utility, but not for the passionate reasons that some people are putting out here today. I feel there's some guy out there, the only thing stopping him from going out and raping and pillaging is religion.
True.
Thank you very much.
Because without that, that's what he would do. Yeah. No, listen. The fear of punishment, a carrot on a stick, is what is keeping him from going to complete anarchy. And I see the political relevance of such a tool in managing people like that who are so crass and lacking in emotion and empathy that the only thing they need is an ancient book, which is a claim and not an evidence, to keep them from doing something like that. I feel sorry for people like that. But I see the relevance of religion in keeping people like that in check. I see an old woman who sees corruption, will never see 3 million in her life, but she has hope in Christianity because it's something that allows her to sleep at night. I know it's a big, fat, beautiful lie, but it helps her sleep.
Okay, my response to Philip is, do you not see that as a form of infantilization? For example, if I wanted my child to brush her teeth before going to bed, I mean, I could do two things. I could try to explain to her why it's important to do so and what would happen if she doesn't. Or I could tell her if she doesn't brush her teeth, the monster will come and get her. Now, I might be more successful, or I might achieve a quicker result by threatening her with stories of monsters and ghosts. But in the long term, if I've conditioned her to form her beliefs in that way, and for her to associate positive behavior with threats, will she ever be able to use her intellect and her reason to arrive at the conclusion that certain things are bad and wrong? So what I'm saying is, are we not crippling people's ability to think if we must use threats?
Go. A child will grow and eventually maybe will learn to reason. An adult who is at a point such as this and cannot reason for themselves, I'm sorry, there's nothing you can do. So if they're an infant and they need a ghost story to keep them in check, a threat of a big boogeyman, aka the devil, who will punish them for eternity, and it works, what is wrong with that, James? What is wrong
because
with that?
Because I don't know if we should be celebrating the fact that the reason someone is not committing murder is because he fears hell. Wouldn't you prefer that he's not killing someone because he values human life?
That, James, there's the ideal. There's the ideal. There's a person who can rationalize that, you know what, I shall not take a life because I love my life. I love living, and I would not deny another human being the right to live. But there's another person where that conversation, that rationalization is not there. In which case, there's no other way to communicate with this person. If it means to refer to them and deal with them as an infant, to keep them in check, to keep the crime level down, then why the fuck not?
Okay, I'll just let Daniel respond quickly.
Yeah, it's very good that actually Philip answered your question. I plan to answer it, the one you posed before, that, for example, does it make me any less moralistic? Or maybe do atheists, you know, have an internal draw towards having a, you know, being
ethical framework?
Yeah. I mean, as I said, many studies disprove that, actually being religious actually does help and does instill some moral value.
The problem is there are studies, for example, exactly. Just a second, measured by indicators such as teenage pregnancy, rates of STDs, poverty, welfare, education, women's rights, secular societies universally are faring better, basing on those indicators. And there are studies to show this. And this is true even within a very religious country like America. You will find that the ones that are more religious tend to be significantly worse off than the more secular states compared by those indicators. So, like I said, if this is a war of whose studies are more accurate,
yeah,
we'll have to resolve this online.
You're right.
But please, make a point.
You're very right, and I won't go into that since that's one thing that needs to be clarified. But what I really want to respond to what you said about infantilism is that what is the use of laws and policy? Why can't I go and rape any female or even a male today? Because I know that I have a punishment. That is infantilism. It is the state saying, if you do this, I'm going to take away your freedoms. It is the same way. So the benefit.
Wait, Daniel, are you saying if tomorrow the government of Uganda said raping a woman is not a crime, you would do so?
No. But you see, it's a deterrent. That is why we have laws.
Okay, tell us why you wouldn't do so.
Because of my religious upbringing and the morals. Through the religious upbringing that have been instilled.
So if it was proven that your religion was false, tomorrow would you rape a woman?
Generally, and I don't want to go back to the studies, as I said, 80% of
people... I'm asking you, would you go out and...
No, I would not. But that's the reason, if it's not me, or in case I had, assuming hypothetically, that I had, I would still have a check and balance. The reason why I would not go and steal that man's wallet, Kevin's wallet, is because, apart from my moralist, there's another check, and that is what we call... are laws, all right? So religion, and it's good that Philip has actually brought that up, has a good benefit because it gives me a check whether or not you know I'm infertile, as you say, or I'm a free thinker, as many of us think. At the end of the day, if I'm to think like a free thinker and say, you know what, if I break the traffic law tomorrow and the guy catches me, I'm going to go into Luzira, and so therefore I'm going to stop. Running the green light. That is infantilism, and that is the benefit of that. And I'm just trying to respond to what you've said about
infantilism. Okay, all right, thanks. That makes sense. Okay, Edward, you wanted to say something?
One minor thing that really bugs me. I don't know where people keep getting this idea that Mary Magdalene was a prostitute, but it's wrong. Just go read your Bibles properly. Don't malign the poor woman. In fact, the common case that's quoted of Jesus, you know, consorting with prostitutes, if I may put it that way, is the one where he rescues an adulteress from being stoned. And adultery is a whole other different thing from prostitution. it's what actually happened was a famous, really old sermon confused the two ladies once, and everybody keeps making that mistake, even though it's clear in the Bible, in black and white, that these are two separate people.
Okay.
Moving right along.
All right. Okay, so my worry, let me put this question to the atheists that are here, the non-religious ones. The 20th century was marked with extreme violence, particularly in the early and the middle portions of the 20th century, when communistic governments took over the Soviet Union, China, and other places in Southeast Asia. Now, the leaders of these countries, these communistic countries, were atheists, people like Stalin, Mao, Pol Pot, and they did see religion as a threat to their power. And apparently they engaged in persecution of religious people. They shut down churches. They used propaganda to turn people away from religion. And their regimes were marked with the kind of violence that is yet to be surpassed in terms of the death count. Do you not consider this to be a credible argument against the claim that religion is not necessary for morality? Because look at what happened when these communistic regimes tried to get rid of religion. You have over 20 million dead. How would an atheist respond to that?
I don't know. It's like very confusing examples. I mean, Pol Pot was batshit crazy, so what he did was totally off the charts. But Stalin, I mean, he persecuted his own people, but you can't blame him for the wars. As far as I remember, the wars started by the Germans. And Hitler was not an atheist, he was actually a non-practicing Christian. So this whole idea that atheists go around spreading wars is totally false.
Okay, wait, and Hitler was a vegetarian. Fuck the vegetarians.
What?
Fuck the vegetarians. They caused the Second World War, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was a vegetarian.
Okay,
Yeah, I wanted to say that religion and Christianity has been as much responsible for bloodshed in human civilization as those few regimes that you can name. You talk about the persecution of the heretics over history, you talk about
Inquisition,
you talk about colonization, slavery, you talk about these crazy ass Roman popes who killed a bunch of people just for the fuck of it, the Crusades. I don't think that that's a good comparison.
Okay, there are many atheists who respond to this this accusation of atheism leading to violence in the 20th century by saying it was actually dogmatic communism that was responsible for the violence. It wasn't that Soviet Russia was atheistic. The problem was that the regime was too structured too much like a religion. You had a cult of personality where you have a supreme leader who's not to be questioned. You had a lot of propaganda. You had stifling of dissenting opinions. And when you look today at Western countries that are largely secular, where people have become atheists sort of voluntarily by simply evaluating the facts and realizing that they have no reason to believe it, rather than a top-down state coerced type of atheism as we saw in the 20th century, what you're seeing is, in fact, these countries today are among the most peaceful in the world and the healthiest societies.
What?
So it doesn't. So it seems to disprove the notion that irreligiosity is directly linked to violence. It's just that the regimes of the 20th century were in fact too much like religion, and that was the problem. I don't know. Do you consider that to be a valid refutation?
Yes.
Okay.
I was about to say that Stalin and those other monsters you mentioned were driven not by atheism to do what they did, but because they had firm belief in the way they were managing things, and as you said, everything was being followed by just like religion.
Okay, where things must not be questioned. All right, Daniel, you want to respond to that?
Just put him, just my two
sense what. I think it's important, and one thing I like about the Americans is they tend to, as much as possible, to separate the state from, what is the French, at least, well, not necessarily the Americans, because, is to separate the state, you know, from religion. And just because you mentioned that, you know, Stalin or whoever it was, whether it was Mao Zedong or Stalin or even Fidel Castro, if we want to a modern day example, just because they might have an oppressed state, and of course the definition of oppressed is really much up in the air, just because they have that, and because you equate it to say with religious beliefs, doesn't necessarily, or a system of beliefs or whatever, it might not be, you know, in a deity or whatever, doesn't necessarily mean that therefore belief in a deity is bad, because that therefore begs the question, if we give atheists, although personally I believe atheism is a religion, but that's another argument, but just imagine we give atheism, you know, let's say have atheists in replacing Morsu in Egypt, does that therefore mean that corruption and all these moralistic things are therefore gone? No, they're independent of whether or not you believe in religion. So the society. So for me, my thinking is, we need to separate the two.
That's a really good point.
All right. However, there are certain times when, even the religion itself does bring benefits to society as a whole. Even if it does remove your personal freedoms, you look at most of these Islamic states. All right. You find that because there's severe punishment for stealing, you have to cut your foot off or your hand off. However irrepressible that might sound to you, but at the end of the day, what do we have? We have theft percentages of crime being very low. So that's an advantage. It might be disadvantaged. Really. I mean, disadvantage to you as a person. I'm just bringing out the fact that actually we need to separate the two. But there are instances where, for society as a whole, religion itself might actually benefit society. So I'm just trying to put that out. But generally, I would like to say, just because, for example, George Bush or say, for example, if we had an atheist president of the United States, doesn't necessarily bring to low crime levels because he's an atheist and George Bush was a right-wing conservative. That's my two cents.
Philip.
I agree with him 200%. But also, as atheists, we shouldn't be ashamed or unaware of the fact that even atheists are very capable of doing particularly bad and evil things. I mean, that's a human condition. I mean, whether you believe or you don't believe, if you're wired wrong from the start by genetics and you're a sociopath, chances are you will still be a sociopath.
All right, thanks, Philip. Just a second. I want to ask the Christians here whether or not you detect a... There seems to be a kind of... Okay, this is my observation. Christianity seems to be getting undermined in the public domain. Public confidence in religious figureheads and religious leaders, or even the institution, seems to be declining, given the kinds of scandals we have seen them, you know, getting exposed for. The stealing, the corruption, the fraud, and all of these things. We're seeing the springing up of liberal churches. I consider your church to be fairly liberal. I mean, in my day, when I was a born-again Christian in the 90s, I mean, there were haircuts you couldn't have. There was this haircut called the French cut or the crew cut, yeah? You could not walk into KPC with that thing without attracting eyes, you know? People look at you. Or if you were a girl, if you wore trousers, you know, they'd look at you badly. Yet today, what you see is among the mainstream evangelical churches like yourselves, you're seeing that there's been a lot of, how can I say, they've relaxed a lot of these restrictions. They don't seem to make a lot of noise when you guys go to nightclubs. I mean, in my day, you could not go to a disco. You were allowing Satan into your heart. But today, I'm sure among many of you here, there are many that go to discos and nightclubs. there are those of you who probably entertain yourselves with Hollywood movies and Hollywood TV programs. You see, 20 years ago when I was born again, these things were just unheard of. Today we're seeing an increased tolerance for all kinds of secular forms of entertainment. This to me is an indication that the church is slowly
eroding away, and give it another 20 years, and you know, your pastor is not going to complain if he hears you cohabit with a person who's not your spouse, or if you had sex the night before, or if you even do drugs. Don't you think this move towards a liberal form of Christianity is a sign that Christianity is losing its influence as a moral guide for society?
I think that's first of all, it's a really good question. I think that to answer that, maybe I'll give a personal sort of point of view. I think some people think that religion is like, okay, you're there, game over, here's a book, those are the rules, do not deviate. And we forget that it's a journey. People don't just accept everything. And I don't think anyone should accept everything and the status quo, because after all, we're fellow human beings. How do you know that I don't know? I mean, before I give somebody my respect as a religious figurehead, as a teacher, I must respect you because of what you do. I'm not going to respect you just because you tell me to. So I think that even as Christians, are Christians, they develop as Christians. I mean, I am not going to lie, you will find me in the club. Oh, hell yeah. Because I'm still on that journey. I'm not sure if I'm there yet. And that's just the truth of it. And I think a lot of, I mean, Amish people. Would I want to be Amish? No. I mean, there's some rules that they have that I cannot even begin to understand. But they're happy to live like that. So I think that that's a journey and it's ongoing. And whether it's still relevant, I mean, you said, you know, when we look around, everything's crumbling. I say it's got to get a lot worse before it gets a lot better. So I think maybe what we're witnessing is a rebirth, a relevance. Because I started off Catholic. I could not understand what was going on. I was bored. I was asleep half the time. You know, because I didn't understand. It didn't talk to me. It wasn't a part of my life. But at Mavuno, I feel like it's a part of my life and it's a part of my struggles. There's no pretense. It is what it is. I don't come to church All Holy on Sunday and pretend that I didn't do anything wrong that week. I come and say I stumbled, I'm challenged, I'm facing this problem, how do I best deal with it? And hopefully along the way, it will make practical sense to me as to why. Like you talked about the child, right? Explain to the child why it's good for him to brush his teeth. Don't say the bogey monster is going to get you if you don't. And then if he gets it, he will do it because he wants to. And to me, I think religion and Christianity in particular should be like that. And I think it's slowly beginning to go there. So actually, I think there's a bright future ahead for Christianity.
Wow. Thanks, Shanice. But I don't know if anyone who's an atheist here might agree with me, but many of us who started out religious and became atheists, like I don't want to call it a spiral, but let's just say our path towards atheism had this, wasn't it comprised of a gradual shift in attitudes towards certain biblical passages, like from a more conservative standpoint to a more liberal one? So before it was, oh no, this is a sin, this is wrong, just don't do it. Then you move to, oh well, you know, maybe I shouldn't take the Bible literally. Don't you think that's a slippery slope that heads towards, well, maybe this stuff isn't even true, why am I even bothering with it, till you get to the point where you just chuck the whole thing out? Well, I mean, once you start, that's why I'm saying, I'm predicting that this movement towards a liberal form of Christianity is going to pave a way for a highly secularized church down the road. And eventually religion will just be something of a social function, serve a social function like it does in Europe today. Let me just let this gentleman here. You're a lawyer, right?
Yeah. Hello, everyone.
Hello.
My name is Rogers. To respond to what Fatboy said, I was a Christian myself. I was a devoted born again Christian, and I believe, like many atheists today, I can't speak for everyone, but personally, I didn't just say that I don't want to continue doing these things because religion is being oppressive and what. But it's because of these weaknesses that I saw, and I was like, no, I cannot continue pursuing this. And I decided to live the life that I chose to live. Not because I wanted to find a convenient life for me, because I wanted to go to nightclubs, because I wanted to listen to worldly music, which was not allowed. Okay, which I thought was wrong. But I think people are just compromising. Christians are just compromising. Because if you admit yourself that going to nightclub is wrong, but I know it's just a journey, and I'm not saying I'm perfect. I don't go to church saying, oh, I'm, I had what? I'm pure and white, but I know what I did was wrong, and I'm working towards making myself better. You already know what you're doing is wrong, but you're compromising because you know, you're just living a Christian life out of convenience, I would say, not because you believe everything that you read in the Bible and take it for truth, but because it's convenient for you to be Christian and you just want to go like that. And you know, you can go and repent and God forgives you and just continues like that. And I believe, like you said earlier, there's going to come a time when the value of religion is going to diminish and won't be like the way it's looked at right now, but just a social function to say, well, I'm a Christian, I'm a Muslim, I'm a white, but without the attributes that come along with it. Mm-hmm. People are day by day making it as simple as they can to live a very convenient Christian life. That's what I think.
Okay. All right, thanks very much. Nancy, quickly, and then I'll come to you.
Okay. Just to respond to what he's saying, I think a very important thing is that there are moral laws that come from God, and then there are cultural laws. Because by that argument, you could say, the Bible says cover your head. Why aren't you covering your head? You know, my mother's church, if you're not buttoned up to here, don't bother going, you know. Whereas in other churches, come in shorts, it's okay. So I think the distinction must be made that there are cultural laws, but then there are moral laws that don't change, that come from God. Same thing. Samson had how many wives? If you have more than one wife in the church today, and yet, if you look at a man like David, he had many wives, but he was a man after God's own heart. How is it possible that David had this many wives and was a man after God's own heart? Yet today, you dare have more than one wife and see if you will not be excommunicated post-haste. So there are moral laws, but there are also cultural laws. And I think our failings are as human beings, or our interpretation of religion, not necessarily our relationship with Christ, but our religion, does not in any way diminish or add to what or who God is.
What are some of God's laws?
All right, thanks, Nancy. Let me come to this lady behind you. What's your name?
Angela.
Angela.
Yes. Hey, how are you all? I wanted to comment about what he said. First, about the Christianity diminishing one day. I don't think it's ever going to diminish. If anything, it's going to get stronger because we've moved away from the do's and the don'ts and the stringent laws of Christianity. Initially, that's what Christianity was about. It could have been for political reasons or for any other reasons. That's what it was about. But now we're beginning to discover a real God that we can have a relationship with, and that's what it's about now. You atheists like to think Christianity is more about fact, but it's more about faith. You've got to strip the two apart. For us, it's more about faith. It's about the relationship, and not all those laws and do's and don'ts and everything else could have been put in place for political reasons. But then initially, I don't think, like, God was the cruel, vengeful God that you people like to depict him to be, or
that's how the Bible depicts him.
Yes, and that is why I said that was done for political reasons. It could have been done for political reasons, and that is why I'm saying now we have moved away from that, and we've come to discover a real God that we can have a real relationship with. It's more about faith, not about fact, like you guys think.
All right, thank you. Just say you, then you. Quickly.
You know, all of this reminds me, I think you remember the story we used to get in primary school of the blind men that went to see the elephant, to touch the elephant. And the one who touched the tail said that the elephant is one little stick. The one who touched the nose, the trunk, said, oh, it's all slimy and wet. The one who touched the... everybody had a different view. When they all got together, no one could actually come up with a real view of how the elephant felt or what the elephant is. And you know, the thing is about God, God is so big. There's a story of one of the philosophers who went to the beach and found this little kid going down to the ocean collecting water and trying to pour it in a hole continuously. And then he asked the kid, what are you trying to do? The kid said, I'm getting all the water out of the ocean and pouring it into this little hole. And he told the kid, are you stupid? Do you think you can get all the water out of the ocean into the hole? And the kid asked him, are you stupid? Do you think you can get God into your head? That's exactly what we're trying to do. God is so big. Even the Bible alone does not define and finish who God is. A Bible is a small summary. It doesn't even cover the 3 years of Jesus' life. Just the 3 years, because it even says that there were so many things that he did that were never even put in the Bible. So it's a small summary of who God is, what he can do. And you know, the more you discover God, and it's unfortunate that so many people have defined God in their way, how they understand him, and have tried to sell him to all of us and force many of us to believe him in that way. But the more as the years go by, we're discovering these different facets of God. We are discovering God in a better way. And that comes when you have a relationship. Oh, yes, I am, buddy. I am, man. Yeah. I told you I'm a free thinker. I really think about all of this. Yeah. You know? And when you discover God and you get to know him, he is going to reveal himself to you in so many different ways. You know, he doesn't have a formula.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, hallelujah. You know,
you're getting carried away. You're preaching. Let's go to Edgar.
Actually, I have a very simple question to you. How would you describe God? Because it seems we don't have any idea what we are talking about. How would you describe him?
For you to know. He's asking, how do you describe God?
You know, it's a journey. I'm getting to know God. So far, I can say he is a friend. And you know, you'll be surprised that you could find that God, later on, that God was the person that walked by you every day, the person that you saw in the office and treated like junk, the tea lady. And you might be you might be shocked that that was God right there.
So your tea lady is God.
You know?
Yeah, Daniel.
Yeah. How come your disciples are not resting on the law of Moses? I told you I'm a recovering Christian. I'm a recovering atheist. But you know what? I'm also a recovering Christian, by the way. You know, when I first became a Christian, that's the trap I fell into. I fell into a trap where I wasn't allowed to listen to so-called atheist music or secular music. I wasn't allowed to watch so-called secular movies. Why? Because I didn't know what Christianity was. Christianity is a relationship. Okay. Jesus himself, let me give you an example from the Bible, because you said the Bible. Jesus himself said, look, John came before me. You didn't believe him. John was very religious. John went out into the desert, followed God's scripture, the law of Moses, sentence by sentence. I, Jesus, came. I was partying. All right? Jesus, the first time we hear about Jesus, is in a party. He's in silk. He was turning water into wine. Into an alcohol. No, I'm just giving an example. In the Bible, Jesus himself says.
Okay.
No. So, Jesus, the crux of Christianity is relationship.
Okay, Daniel.
Whether I go to silk, drink three bottles of wine, it is actually relationship.
Okay,
with God.
Daniel. Okay, fine. But you see, our topic tonight is about relevance of Christianity.
Well, I was responding to your.
Just a second. I'm just sort of adding on to what you've said. Right. And I think why, as atheists, those of us who are atheists do find this slide towards a more liberal kind of Christianity interesting, is because it really does touch on the issue of relevance,
right,
of the religion in the lives of people. Right. Let me explain. For example, I mean, I remember I used to pray quite regularly, and you know, because I believed that prayer and communicating with God was so important.
Indeed it is.
And then, you know, you have your moments where you sort of slacken a little bit, so
like
you forget to pray today.
All right.
You forget to pray the next day. Before you know it, you haven't prayed for 2 weeks. Then before you know it, you haven't prayed for a month, and like, wait a minute, life is the same. I'm still scoring good grades in class. I'm still healthy. So you begin to realize that your degree of religiosity or religious expression bears very little correlation with the quality of your life. You get what I'm saying? So
yes.
I'm not saying this is the entire argument, but I'm saying it does sort of present in the mind of a person the idea that actually, this religion isn't that relevant in my life.
So the indicators.
And it does sort of take many of us down the path to atheism eventually, because we realize that it's just not necessary.
I very well understand that. And that's why I said I'm also a recovering Christian religious person. You know? Otherwise, and nobody has claimed that, for example, being the richest person, it's indicators, as you said. The richest person in the world is not necessarily a Christian. Okay, the person who passes exams more is not necessarily the person who prays more. You know, Christianity is more than that. It is broader. It is all encompassing. I also passed my exams, and I wasn't a Christian then. all right? But it was just, you know, the idea of Christianity is just all-encompassing. It's about quality of life. It is about understanding and having a focus. The reason I'm a Christian, and there are very many reasons why people are Christians, but for me the reason why is because it gives life a whole new meaning. You can't measure that scientifically. You can't measure that by, you know, by whatever quantum
science. A hobby. Playing video games makes your life nice.
I also play video games, but you know what? On top of my video games, I still believe that Christianity is much more than that.
Because have you ever tried a threesome? You don't know what you're missing, bro. I mean, it's, my point is, with all due respect, Daniel, these are subjective interpretations, and I can respect
them. And they work for me, and they do work.
Exactly. So I can understand if a person says, for me, my religion gives me all kinds of highs. To another person, something else will do the same. But, I don't know. Is there anyone who would like to sort of challenge some of what Daniel's been saying? Stella?
I'm challenging Daniel.
Okay, what would you like to say? Go, Stella.
There's nothing about that person who's talking right now. Anyway, I just want to say, what is this... we're talking about relevance of a religion, and I can say this much. Different people, different relevance, right? Personally, I like to pick and choose, you know, what's relevant to me. As a Christian, you know, I'm not going to take everything, you know, I'm not going to not wear trousers to church, because I bloody feel comfortable, right? But I get that you guys, you would like us to kind of shift towards, you know, more liberal thinking, let the whole Christianity thing go. And I can get that. Some people have actually let themselves into traps because of Christianity. Like that stupid couple who let their son die while they were praying for him. I mean, that kind of stupidity makes me sometimes want to strangle people for being religious. But people get different things from it. And if it's not harmful, I say, whatever rocks your boat, really. Honestly. It's like, let them have it. Okay. Why not?
And do you think if religion is at all relevant, it has to do, for the most part, with the socio-economic condition of most people? Which is that the more poor and the more desperate you are, the more religion is of value to you as a consolation, as a way of dealing with your challenges, and as a way of coping with your misery. Because, hey, fine, life might suck today, but tomorrow I'll be in heaven and drink milk all week. You know, that sort of thing. And there seems to be a correlation between the socioeconomic situation of people and their religiosity. The poorer people tend to be, the more religious they tend to be. And the wealthier they tend to be, the less religious they tend to be. These are trends. We'll talk about trends and maybe measured by indicators such as access to healthcare, access to unemployment benefits, education. Look at what's happening in the West where Christianity is declining. Yes, there are wealthy Africans who are still deeply religious, and sure, I would put forward reasons such as... I would put forward reasons... Just a second. I would put forward reasons such as the fact that even though you might have your isolated cases of wealth here and there scattered across the continent, society as a whole generally does not do a good job of providing the kinds of safety nets. So, for example, today, you're a wealthy minister... Seriously. Sure, sure. Today you're a wealthy minister, and tomorrow you're going to be a guy who's lost everything. The line between wealth and poverty here is a very thin one, and one can transition to and fro quite regularly and with ease. So, Angela, how do you want to respond to that?
What are you saying? That, I don't know, Christianity makes the more miserable become the more Christian we become? Like,
that's the only reason people are Christian? Because we're miserable? And then, if we're not, does it mean that when we become Christian, all of a sudden, we're going to get all these things that we always wanted?
No, the thing is, when you look at demographic trends all like around the world, when you try to establish a correlation between religiosity or lack thereof and the socioeconomic condition of particular groups of people living in different societies, you do notice an inverse correlation between religiosity and socioeconomic status, measured by indicators like democracy, respect for human rights, education, welfare, and so forth.
Is finding the happiness in God. What is wrong with that?
I'm sorry?
What if this poor person...